The corruption of the GOP. Just this past weekend, in an appearance on the Journal editorial report, Republican economist Arthur Laffer, of Laffer Curve fame, unintentionally revealed the rot at the core of the GOP. In an astonishing statement, he waxed exultant at the prospects of Democrat Jared Polis winning the gubernatorial race in Colorado. Laffer is thrilled because Polis has the right economic plan. For those who don't know, Polis is openly homosexual, married to a man, and supports every lousy pro-homosexual legislation that a sexual anarchist can conceive. He pushed for the Student Non-Discrimination Act, the Hate Crimes Prevention Act, the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, and the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's also pro-abortion. None of that matters, however, when money is your god. One of the many failings of flawed humans is the unwillingness either to think deeply about the implications of ideas or to heed warnings from those who do. That failing is no more amply demonstrated than in the contemporary incarnation of the Republican Party that teeters on the edge of ethical vacuity. One of the reasons, perhaps the central reason, for that transformation from ethical leadership to ethical vacuity is the abandonment of the dismissively called social issues. The social issues are those issues the abandonment of which spells the death of culture. Societies that fail to recognize, affirm, and fight tenaciously for the right of humans in the womb to exist, for true marriage, for heteronormativity, and for full-bodied religious liberty cannot survive, no matter how low the tax rates or how favorable the regulatory climate for business is. GOP leaders who fail to grasp that don't deserve to lead. So what else do we see today? Which persons and organizations are committed to corrupting the GOP? Which persons and organizations work like the devil to have the GOP embrace the idea that of all conditions constituted by subjective feelings and volitional sexual acts, homosexuality alone must be accorded special privileges? Well, we see Dennis Prager inviting homosexual pundit and rising Fox News star Guy Benson to make a PragerU video, which Benson used to say this, and I quote, "I'm a Christian, a patriotic American, and a free market shrink the government conservative who also happens to be gay. Far too often, people are sorted by their gender or their skin color or their sexual orientation or any other immutable characteristic that has nothing to do with ideas or values. To be candid, in my day-to-day life and work, I spend a lot more time thinking and writing about the failures of Obamacare, for example, than I do about LGBT issues," end quote. Benson says he happens to be gay as if it has no more moral import or political relevance than his hair color. He also designates his homosexuality an immutable characteristic that has nothing to do with ideas or values, even as he celebrates Obergefell and marries a man. In other words, his claim is a bald-faced lie. In another act of rhetorical subterfuge, Benson implies that the amount of time he spends writing about Obamacare relative to the amount of time he spends writing about LGBT issues suggests something meaningful. The disparity in time spent addressing topics, however, has nothing necessarily to say about how deeply he cares about particular issues or about his positions on those issues. There are myriad reasons Benson might spend more time thinking and writing on Obamacare, or why he might not spend time thinking and writing on LGBT issues. We see Republicans, including Laura Ingraham, Mike Huckabee, and Jeanine Pirro, rejoicing over homosexual hairdresser Brandon Strzok's walk-away movement that grew out of his decision to leave the Democrat Party to join Republicans. When interviewing Strzok, not one pundit asked him, for example, what his views on marriage or adoption by homosexuals are. Not one discussed whether or why it matters if the GOP retains a commitment to marriage or children's rights to be raised whenever possible by a mother and a father. We see Jeanine Pirro, Candace Owens, Dave Rubin, who's homosexual, Milo Yiannopoulos, who's homosexual, Ann Coulter, Chadwick Moore, who's homosexual, Margaret Hoover, and Essie Cupp, all affirming leftist ideas about the nature and morality of homosexual activity and relationships. Catholic Sean Hannity says he's libertarian on marriage. Well, how about adoption by homosexuals? Has any Fox News pundit, including Hannity, addressed that? We see policy wonks like Grover Norquist, who, along with Ann Coulter, sat on the advisory board of the now-defunct pro-homosexual activist organization Go Proud, and lesbian Rachel Hoff, who served on the Republican Platform Committee, not only endorsing, but seeking to have the GOP endorse leftist views of homosexuality. We see Republican governors, U.S. senators, and representatives like Richard Burr, Mike Kaufman, Susan Collins, Carlos Corbello, Charlie Dent, Lisa Murkowski, Rob Portman, Bruce Rauner, Phil Scott, and Scott Wagner endorsing policies and laws that embody a leftist sexuality ideology. Add all the state and local Republican leaders who reject the GOP platform on issues related to sexuality, and this would grow to the length of a greedy child's Christmas list to Santa. We see political appointees like National Security Advisor John Bolton, U.S. Ambassador to Germany Richard Grenell, homosexual, and U.S. Ambassador to Russia John Huntsman Jr. endorsing Democrat positions on sexuality. We see organizations like Log Cabin Republicans, of which Rachel Hoff serves on the leadership team, and the American Unity Fund, whose president is Margaret Hoover, committed to remaking the GOP in the image of the Democratic Party. And we see wealthy GOP donors like Paul Singer, Cliff Asness, and Peter Thiel, who with their deep pockets can make or break a candidate's election, embracing sexual anarchy. Singer has a homosexual son and is founder of the homosexuality-affirming Republican American Unity PAC. Asness has been a big donor to the American Unity PAC, and PayPal founder and Republican Peter Thiel, quote, hosted an anti-Proposition 8 fundraiser in New York City in 2010, organized by the American Foundation for Equal Rights, and gave $375,000 to Americans for Workplace Opportunity to help push 48 House Republicans to support the Employment Non-Discrimination Act in 2014. An expose of the collusion between big money Republican donors and Democrats to redefine marriage and law in New York should serve as a warning to naive or cowardly conservative Republicans. And I quote the New York Times, "The story of how same-sex marriage became legal in New York is about shifting public sentiment and individual lawmakers moved by emotional appeals from gay couples who wish to be wed, but behind the scenes, it was really about a Republican Party reckoning with a profoundly changing power dynamic, where Wall Street donors and gay rights advocates demonstrated more might and muscle than a Roman Catholic hierarchy and an ineffective opposition." End quote. That's conservative Republicans, all right. Ineffective. Some naive or disingenuous conservatives argue that the embrace of a homosexual identity is politically irrelevant. Really? So the embrace of a homosexual identity tells us precisely nothing about what a person holds to be true about homosexuality? And those beliefs tell us nothing about what they believe about marriage, adoption, children's rights, and religious liberty? Sure, it's possible for someone who embraces a homosexual identity to oppose the legal recognition of homoerotic unions as marriages, to oppose adoption by couples in a homoerotic union, to believe that children have an intrinsic right to be raised by a mother and father, and to support the right of people to refuse to provide goods or services for the celebration of faux marriages. But how likely and common are such beliefs among the homosexual community? The far more common commitments of those who affirm a homosexual identity are revealed by former Republican National Committee Chair, homosexual Ken Mellman, who has expressed regret for not publicly announcing his homosexuality sooner because, quote, if he had publicly declared his sexuality sooner, he might have played a role in keeping the party from pushing an anti-gay agenda, end quote. And by pushing an anti-gay agenda, the Atlantic writer means supporting a pro-sexual truth platform. This is not a criticism of political partnering with those who choose to place their unwanted, unchosen homosexual attraction at the center of their identity. This is a criticism of political partnering with those who seek to transform the GOP into a party that is no longer committed to policies and laws that defend true marriage, the rights of children, the sanctity and inviolability of the natural family, heteronormativity, and religious liberty. There's a difference between being co-belligerents with someone of a different ideological stripe on a particular issue and welcoming into an organization someone who wants to fundamentally change the views, values, and goals of that organization. This is a criticism of political partnerships with those who seek to make the GOP just like the Democrat Party on issues related to life, marriage, family, sexuality, and religious liberty. It is as foolhardy to partner with those who seek to change the GOP platform on sexual issues as it would be to partner with those committed to changing the GOP platform on tax rates, single-payer health care, and immigration. For the health of the nation and the GOP, it would be preferable for Laffer, Yiannopoulos, Benson, Rubin, and Rauner to join the Democrat Party and work to change its position on economic matters than to stay in the GOP working to change its position on the critical social issues. So, conservatives, next time some feckless Republicans tell you to shut up about the social issues, take a play from the feminist handbook and roar. Politely and winsomely, of course.